I'm Jackie Vetrano from Skidmore College.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social.
I am open to all things.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. We can talk about Thanksgiving and end of the year and my annoying cat.
That is a cat? I thought it was a kid.
Oh, no, I don't have a child. I just have a cat.
That is your cat?
That is Casey. Yep. That's
my cat. I thought our cat was a little meow meowy. That's something else.
She's real. It's less of like vocal and more of just like, what are you doing? I would like to be a part of that thing.
Uh huh.
And she talks to her little stuffed mouse a lot. That's her other thing.
That's adorable.
So, you know, Hooray. Now she is just sitting on the chair, just kind of hanging out. She wants to be a part of this. I think she just gets jealous. Mm-hmm. Like she wants to be famous. So, you know.
Well, cats and the internet do very well. So,
yes, this, I will, I'll send it to you via direct message on Twitter, Josie, a picture of my cat so you can understand why she is so ridiculous.
Maybe you should just go live with her.
That would be amazing. Like I don't even know where to start with her. Honestly, I kind of want to like put a GoPro on her back and like follow her around all the time, but honestly, I think she spends, you know, I think cats, what, they sleep for like 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day. What mm-hmm. is it? I don't know.
Might be a little boring.
But Casey's probably sleeps 3 times that every day, if it's possible. she just hangs out. But anyway, I assume that Logan started recording.
Yeah, I got all that cat stuff. That's awesome.
Good. Oh, Casey, you want to, she's asking me. She's like, was I on that? She's asking me now.
That's awesome. I just had a nap. Naps are required on writing days for me. I just get to the point where there's nothing left in my brain, and the only way to not, if I watch TV on a break, I'll just get upset and frustrated. So I shouldn't be watching what I'm watching, like the news. But when I nap, I actually like wake up energized. And then I can do another chunk. So maybe I'm part cat.
Napping is the best thing. I wish that it was socially acceptable to nap during work. I think I would be much more productive if I could do that.
Some industries.
I would be willing to work like a 9 to 10 hour day if it meant I could nap during it. I would be willing to do that.
Right.
Maybe I'll just try it.
Well, I had a colleague. This was many, many years ago. He would take naps at the office and like had a pillow underneath his desk, but it was really frowned upon.
I would imagine.
Yeah, it's usually frowned upon, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, see, the strategy is you don't tell anybody.
Or you just like shut your lunch break.
It was obvious what was happening.
So. See, my thing is that I occasionally snore and I would feel like I would get like the jig would be up. Like people would be like, hey, we heard snoring coming from your office for a solid hour. What was that about?
That was like, just background noise.
It's just a new soundtrack I was listening to get me motivated.
White noise.
Well, I'm pretty lucky that I work from home, so I get a sometimes my animals don't like when I nap because they're like, hey, hang out with us.
Obviously, I would assume the answer is no because you've probably been doing it a long time. But do you struggle working from home? Because your couch is there and like your bed is there and your TV's there.
Honestly, it's not the I'm going to get distracted and do non-work things. It's I could work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And that's just something I've come to terms with. Like I work in education. What I'm building is within that industry, but it's a business. And that's kind of the realities when you're trying to run and create your own business. But so I have like those little nap breaks, like it's honestly like kind of takes everything I have to justify that it's okay to take this 30-minute break. So working from home is actually not as glamorous. I mean, maybe at first I was like, oh my gosh, I can wake up when I want and like go work at the beach. I don't ever go work at the beach. Like, and I'm always up like at 8 and then I'm doing work again at night. So it's nice. Like I'm setting everything on my own, but it just looks different. Like I'm not in committee meetings. If I am, they're virtual. My new joke is I work from home, but also I work on United Airlines because of how much I'm on their airplanes.
Do you have your own seat now? Are you a window seat or an aisle seat or a middle seat?
You totally called me. I do. I sit in 8F.
No way.
Pretty much every time.
What is so good about 8F?
You know what I found? So I'm at the status with United that I always get like the premium, so I can automatically like buy that seat without having to pay more for like, even though I don't need the extra leg room, I feel a little bit guilty about that. But so yes, it's a window seat. It's not blocked by, you know, like the propeller stuff. But I also find because it's not the very, very first part where you get extra leg room that it's more likely the middle seat will be empty because people are usually, they'll get that very first one or for some reason just further back. And then if it's a big enough plane, then there's usually like a restroom between first class and then the rest of, you know, us normal people. so, you know, so it's that those, I don't know, that's been my two.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's my home.
So while we're talking about your work habits, how about you introduce yourself and kind of tell the listeners kind of what you do?
Oh yeah. Hi. So my name is Josie Alquist. I worked on college campuses for a little over 12 years in student affairs, from student activities and leadership and student housing. And then about the time I was starting my doctorate, I started to run social media for the institution I was working at, especially within the Division of Student Affairs, and helping our management team, like our senior execs within the division. So that topic really fueled me while I was getting my dissertation, doing my dissertation. So when I decided, well, I'm just going to focus on my doc program, social media and leadership became my primary research agenda. And that is the primary reason why I'm doing what I do today, because getting the doctorate fueled people wanting to hear about my research, about the curriculum that I built for college students on digital student leadership. I do coaching now from it. I've been able to write a lot about it. And so I consider myself in higher ed, like in the student affairs world, but I'm a bit more adjacent on this kind of entrepreneur track. And I love it.
How Can long I also have say you been congratulations? Entrepreneuring? Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you.
Because you are one of LinkedIn's top voices in higher education.
Yeah.
That
was fun. That was fun. They reached out to me actually a couple years ago and said, hey, if you promise to like blog and post a lot, we'll feature you on our homepage. And because of that, I started to get tens of thousands of LinkedIn followers, not like connections that I said, yes, like we'll connect each other back and forth. Like, you know, you can just follow people one direction. And so I have like over 100,000 LinkedIn followers, which is kind of wild. And so when they reached out this year, cause I've continued to like, you know, post blogs in there and content, I submitted my information and yeah, they selected me. It was pretty cool.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
So do you get like cool LinkedIn perks now? Like, do they send you swag or like a private jet?
I should request these things.
I would
free
try
Microsoft
to milk it.
Office. Well, I mean, they're owned by Microsoft, so
that
I
is
mean, I imagine
true.
That's what they'd give you if they had something.
You know, I'm writing
or an
these
Xbox.
Things down. An Xbox.
Listen, the worst they say is no, right? Like,
yeah,
the worst they say is no. So are you going to put that on your business card now? Like top voice, top LinkedIn voice in higher ed?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I try not to get too wrapped up into things like that. Like, I know there's some individuals that go after things like that, or like different awards, or like, I didn't go get my doctorate or even start blogging because I wanted to like be recognized for it. I feel like, oh, I'm going to get on Twitter and I want to get all these Twitter followers. Like, I want all these thousands of followers, because you can tell the people that are online or creating content, because that's what they crave. So I don't know. Maybe that's like a little pet peeve of mine. Like, we have to have the right intentions for why we're doing this, even though, I mean, obviously that feels good when you get recognized.
Hey, we didn't start this podcast to get hundreds of thousands of followers or to
win awards. And now we have hundreds of thousands of followers.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of thousands, Logan. Just spin it.
Spin it.
One of them is my mom, which is worth millions of followers.
You know what? My dad is my number one podcast listener.
Yeah. It feels good. It feels real good. Hi, Josie's dad. I hope he's listening.
Dad. He totally will. He'll listen to this probably 3 times.
Oh, that's so lovely. And that pads our numbers. That's great.
Yes, it does. Please do. I don't think Jackie's mom even listens that much.
Industry listeners. He works at a coal mine. He's a mechanic.
Wow. So we've expanded beyond the higher ed industry thanks to your father. That's great. This is so exciting. What a good day. It's a Hanukkah miracle.
Hanukkah miracle.
Yes, happy Hanukkah for anyone celebrating.
And that's all the time we have for the show.
Oh, I know.
I'm kidding.
I was having so much fun.
Adios.
End on a positive note. Yes, happy Hanukkah.
Thanks. It's been really fun. This has been the highlight so far.
This is night two, right?
For sure. Night number two that we are recording this. But by the time we put this out, it will be past Hanukkah.
This is true.
But speaking of holidays, Josie, how is your Thanksgiving? Do you work on Thanksgiving because you work from home?
So what I tend to do around holidays to justify like taking the time off is I just grind really hard leading up to it, or maybe one of the days of the weekend. Because I really do have to force myself. And the other couple of reasons, like, A, I'm a little bit of a workaholic, but I also love what I do. So sometimes, with the exception of some writing days that can be really tough, or like when I was learning how to podcast, which was just like crisis after crisis. I mean, the work that I do is pretty fun. And so that's part of the reason why you have to like, okay, I can like unplug from it for now. But Thanksgiving was great. We actually went up to north of Santa Barbara after Thanksgiving to enjoy a different type of Black Friday in the form of Cabernet and Pinot Noir.
That sounds way better than any kind of Black Friday I've ever had.
some wine tasting with a group of friends. So that's great. Yeah.
I was actually over in your neck of the woods week before last.
You survived.
Yes,
I did. What brought you out here?
So Belmont has a West program in LA. So where students intern in Hollywood and at the kind of music industry in Los Angeles. So it was pretty awesome. Got to hang out and film some videos and have some time with friends while I was out there. It was before all this craziness that's happening right now. But
all the fires.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you know, our thoughts are going out to you. We actually to you guys out there. We actually have two people at University of California Santa Barbara that have been on the show too. So we hope everybody's okay.
Yeah, it's
kind of crazy.
Yeah, pretty much north of LA, Ventura County, all the way up to Santa Barbara County. And honestly, like getting closer toward where we were after Thanksgiving, it's rough.
It was crazy because so I was riding on the 405, right? And by the Getty Center. And I just looked out there and I was like, man, that is really dry looking. And it was crazy.
So
like a week later, like there's that apocalyptic video of people driving down the 405 and like the mountain on fire. That was crazy.
Yeah. My husband's like, that is fake. That's not real. I was like, no, babe, that happened. We didn't leave the house for like 2 days, like air quality, but also you just don't want to get on the freeways when there's stuff like that going on. So, ugh.
It's crazy.
We've been out here since 2005. And Southern California always gets fires, unfortunately. But this has definitely been an intense season for us. So,
but it was beautiful out there. Hollywood is not what I was expecting. It was much more rundown and sketch than I thought it would be.
Yes. I typically tend to warn people, don't go to Hollywood Boulevard expecting to see celebrities. You'll see a lot of other types of characters.
Yeah, one of them followed me into a bathroom, and it was kind of sketch.
Yeah, head to Malibu or even Bel Air or Beverly Hills. But yeah,
we did all of those things.
Hollywood to hang out. Okay.
I was actually kind of surprised by Beverly Hills because it looked like it was gentrifying. Like, you know, I'm here in Nashville, you know, I mean, I see gentrification like all the time. You know, they tear down the old houses and they build huge, like tall, skinny modern houses. And in Beverly Hills, they're like tearing down the mansions and then building bigger, taller,
bigger
more modern mansions. And I'm just like, wow, even the rich people are getting displaced by even richer people.
Yep. There's a lot of money out here, but there is also a lot of poverty. So you see wide spectrum, for sure. But, I'm not from here originally, but we're finally like calling it home. We have a solid set of friends out here. You kind of learn your pockets of things you enjoy doing or when you don't get on the road. But honestly, I'm heading to LAX and to different cities and countries so often, so sometimes when I get back to LA, like I literally don't want to leave my house. I'm like, this little space right here is going to be just fine.
And a little aside to our listeners, if you're wondering why there wasn't a show like 2 weeks ago, like there should have been, it's because I was in LA and kind of impossible to record a podcast. So apologies for that.
Because there's no technology in LA, or there's no Wi-Fi, so I couldn't get a hold of Logan. It was very
actually,
strange.
Actually, there wasn't any Wi-Fi in the hotel powerful enough for us to actually record a good podcast. So there is truth to that. Silly
embassy
suites.
Yeah, I don't trust hotel Wi-Fi whatsoever.
Mm. So I'm sure you could probably write a travel book, Josie. Have you considered that?
How to survive
like
travel
business
at
trips
four, at
yeah
4 foot 10.
Oh my god, that would be a great book. That'd be amazing. I would like credit on the thank you page. Thank
yeah
you very much.
I almost feel like there is, you can tell the character of a person who sees you struggling to put your bag in the overhead bin if they help you or not, like like I've literally had a bag fall back on my face.
I've also done that, and I'm not 4 foot 10, so
okay,
I'm with you.
I feel a little better.
I am with you. So what was the most awkward like seatmate situation that you've ever had on an airplane?
There was a young man. This was an early flight. I'm fairly certain he didn't go to bed the night before. Probably was at some club or something. And then I think he had to have taken some kind of substance to sleep because I could not wake him up for the life of me. Like I knew he was alive because he was like, you know, making noises or whatever. But part of the reason I had to use the restroom, but also half of him was in my lap. Like he had fallen over onto my side, which honestly you hear stories about like that all the time. So that's one. I've had I don't know what the rules of the road are, but I've had people that refuse to get up and I have to crawl over them. to get out. And they're usually a little bit older. So like those I honestly can forgive a little bit, because maybe, you know, like they get, it's painful to move around or whatnot, but it's really awkward to basically have to shimmy across somebody and like not fall back in their lap at 30,000 feet or whatever. So yeah, there's funny stories like that.
Oh dear. I don't think I've ever had a really uncomfortable seat issue. My thing is when you happen to be sitting next to someone and like before you take off, you know, you kind of have that half conversation and you don't know how to like naturally end it, because it's not like you could walk away and like make an excuse that you, oh, like, oh, great to meet you, I'm gonna go over there, like you're next to them the whole time, like, so how do you end that conversation?
Mine's just perfume.
That is rough.
Yeah,
that is very rough.
So someone else you should have on the podcast is James Robilata. He's another speaker, an author, and he actually would be my worst nightmare to sit next to on a plane, especially an early flight, because he does a blogging series of airplane friends, and then he writes about the conversations they have in the sky, and then they take a photo and the whole thing. But people either love it, right? Like, oh, I'm going to meet this friend, we're going to stay in contact forever after having a conversation on an airplane. Or you're like me, where you're like, I'm like, leave me alone. Like, I got work to do, or I'm going to go to bed. But that's his thing. And I mean, he's got like a great personality, so I'm sure I would talk to him if I didn't know him already. But he's got some fun stories.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah. So you do digital leadership, and that obviously is something that you're known for. You go around the country and you talk to folks about this. So this is kind of a professional development podcast. We do like to squeeze in like little things like that when we're not talking about planes and traveling and food and cats. But, you know, what do you think are some important things that folks in student affairs or anything in higher ed, what should they know about being a digital leader, or at least, you know, working in this kind of space?
Well, so I tend to talk to at least either college students or to administrators or faculty. And especially with administrators, I find that I'm trying to be the voice for current students and trying to explain with a lens of empathy and empowerment, like how they're really using and experiencing digital technologies, because we make a lot of assumptions. And there's actually a lot of things that they're struggling with, as well as things that they love about social, but we don't always hear about both. And I tell them that because I think we all have a role in how we need to help students, administrators, executives be better online. Like, we need to be better humans. And so call it leadership, call it digital influence, call it ethics or character education. They're within our entire society, what it means to lead and make an impact in this world is different than it was 10 years ago. And so while I might throw around some curriculum and some terms about it, I try to bring especially administrators to the table saying, hey, the things that you could do 15 years ago in college, nobody can do those things anymore without them potentially getting on YouTube or Instagram. So are we actually giving students the skills to make better choices, not just in what they post, but what they do in their lives? Because we're now held to the fire about everything we do 24/7. But how do we make sure students don't feel silenced in what they're doing? Like, we talk about things like, oh, we want users to be positive social change agents, like if you use the social change model, right? But then again, we shame them and say, oh, well, activism online, that's slacktivism, that doesn't count. Well, what do you want them posting about then? Like, what So we tell them all the time, like, don't do this. These are the policies. These are the guidelines. And we do this for staff and faculty too. But what is it that we actually aspire to make an impact because of these social tools? And some of it we have no control over. Like, Twitter's going to do an update next week and some people are going to love it and some are going to hate it. But now we have to be reactionary to make the tool work for us. And so some of what I do is strategy, because that is a tool. It's a thing to teach. But some of it is also just like how to be, again, like how to be a human being, how to thrive and not just survive tech. And honestly, with students, it's just finally getting them talking about it, because no one is asking them the questions of how they're doing and how they're feeling. And then I try to lead them through, like, well, if with your passions, with your values, how could you apply your leadership capacity and how you use Instagram? And that just really gets them thinking in a way they never had before. That is really exciting to take on.
So is that the type of stuff that's being covered, that you're covering in your classes?
So the class I teach at Florida State is definitely fueled from that. I kind of figure it's like my sandbox where I get to experiment with a different curriculum or different concepts, and definitely where these students I get for 15 weeks. So I get to know them and how they're really doing. Whereas, like, if I'm going into a campus for just one day, I just get a student for an hour. I only get a snapshot. So I use the social change model along with, Eric Qualman's text, What Happens on Campus Stays on YouTube. And then the curriculum that I created from my dissertation, which was on student leaders and what they were actually experiencing and posting about on social media. And so I just mashed that all together. And we've been doing that for about 2 years. And we're starting to analyze some of the research that we're doing on it, which is really exciting, because we could actually say now this is evidence-based curriculum and not just like, oh, this is maybe something we should try to help students with social media. So that's really exciting, because I'm that's a data nerd. Cool. Yeah.
Data is so fun.
Data.
So what type of students are taking your class then? Because this is a very, like, I mean, this could apply to many different fields, right?
Absolutely. So it falls under a leadership certificate that's offered through the Leadership Learning Research Center at Florida State. I met the woman that hired me from a blog post that I wrote. Wow. So that's my other call to
networking.
Totally. To professionals and students, like, you need to create content. You never know who's going to, it's going to arrive in their inbox. So she loved what I was doing. I teach online and offer the course when I can. And it's open to anyone. And I've found, and I think it's because the course has kind of developed a positive reputation. Like, it's unique, it's fun. I don't give tests. So I'm starting to get some interesting pockets from campus, and Florida State is huge, right? But I'm getting a lot of very high profile student athletes, and then positional student leaders within Greek life or different student organizations, student government. But I also get students that aren't involved in anything, or I sometimes get graduate students. Because the class is online, I think it works for a lot of people's different lifestyles, or if they're not physically at Tallahassee.
That's really interesting. I would definitely take it. Can I take it is my follow-up.
Well, I do have ideas of how I could scale it outside of Florida. Because also, like, as we all know, like, each credit at a university campus is not cheap. And I want to be able to share that kind of content with anybody at a much, you know, lower cost, including middle school and high school students. So it's on the to-do list. You know, again, I'm a one-woman shop. So anything that I pump out, it's got to be me at the end of the day. But I'd love to be able to create courses outside of the structure of institutions. So stay tuned.
I think that's actually interesting, because I wonder if it would have more of an impact when students are, and, you know, just getting involved with social media, as opposed to when they already have habits. because everyone already has kind of a social media personality by the time they get to, you know, freshman year of college. I mean, I see that already with, you know, the stuff that I do with social media. You know, students have pretty much found their voice as to how they post, and what they post and all that kind of stuff. So I wonder if catching them early would, you know, make more of an impact.
Yeah, so our colleagues in K-12 have been using what they call digital citizenship curriculum, and it's honestly a hit or miss. Like, one student might come to college with that education throughout their entire, like, K-12 experience. Another student has probably never heard of it. Mm-hmm. When I was developing my curriculum, I thought about using and remixing that curriculum, since it's honestly just much more well-known. But I don't find students in college respond to even the name, especially if they've received it, you know, if they were in fifth or sixth grade. So that's why, well, I knew leadership programming was already pretty established on campuses, and there were leadership theories I could pull from. And I mean, to be quite honest, I feel like we need to be more than just like good citizens. Like, we really do need some people to embrace themselves as a leader in all physical and digital spaces.
Right.
So I got more excited about using that terminology. But we talk about, I get them talking about middle school and even elementary school. If you scroll back the clock, our current traditional age college students could have gotten a MySpace in fifth grade or AOL. Totally, right? Like, I missed MySpace by 3 months in college. Thank God.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. You really didn't. My MySpace, I'm pretty sure, is still out there because I don't know the email that I used when I was like 13, and I can't deactivate it, and it's real embarrassing.
Yeah. So this is totally. It'll be in the show notes.
I don't know if you can find it. Also, if you do find it, please don't put it in the show notes. I am an open book, but I don't want people to so easily access my MySpace page. Right. They really have to dig for it.
We make choices. Oh, I found my. It. Stop it.
Are you both looking? Oh, stop.
I'm not. My hands are up. I'm not.
That is a nice fedora.
That was for a tap routine I was in. I did not own that hat. Thank you very much.
Ruh-roh.
Okay, so I think every like 12 to 14 year old girl goes through kind of a weird like phase in their life, and that was just what is reflected in my MySpace page. So just leave it at that.
But that's the reality now, right? Like, mm-hmm. Your awkward middle school days will always come along with you if you were active on MySpace or Facebook or Twitter and you don't delete it. And I am not a proponent of students going back and like deleting their entire digital past. Cause that's what the message they're getting is, oh, admission counselors are gonna go like search for you back when you were in sixth grade. Like, they don't have time for that. Like, if something comes to their attention, just like when you're a resident director, right? Like, you have to address something if something's happening in your floor or whatever. So I find overwhelmingly, and the approach that I use with students is more of a positive lens, because what I'm told over and over is we've tried to scare the crap out of our kids and students mm-hmm. about social, and they're still stumbling. So that approach is not working. So we got to try something else.
Yeah. I was reading an article about the way that like high schoolers use social media and the way they view it kind of as like a tool, and talking about like curating their presence and like Instagram specifically. Like, I've been joking that Skidmore might fire me to hire a high school kid to run their social media accounts, because they are like so in tune with what does well, what time they should be posting. They have like a threshold of likes and engagement. Like, they have a real understanding of that stuff, even though they're using it strictly for their own personal brand. Like, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're picking up real life skills, but some people would say that's a warning sign. That's a concern that they become consumed with, quote unquote, curating or paying attention to likes. And I mean, just like anything else, like with drinking wine or going shopping, anything you do in abundance needs to be managed, right? So just one type of behavior doesn't then mean it's a warning sign for everything. But I think we are quick to judge and to potentially go to, oh, they're addicted, or, you know, like their self-esteem is impacted by these tools, because some youth are. There is research that says that, but not all of them.
Mm-hmm. I wonder
so I'm
how.
I'm trying to be their advocate, because again, I don't think we're actually asking them a lot of the questions and experiences they're having. So I try to get people back up to date. I need to do a status update.
How many iterations of your class has it been?
Like, how many times have I updated the curriculum, or how many times?
How many times have you run the course? And then my follow up is, how has it changed?
Let's see. Over 2 years, I would say it's been offered at least 6 times. And luckily, I get a lot of independence to just make little changes as I go. But we're doing a big research project on it, and that is also fueling some adjustments to it in a good way. Like, we're finding really great, great things. Thankfully, I'm excited to bring on new instructors that expand, you know, the curriculum and hopefully offer it more, because especially my spring is my busiest time of year. So I just can never offer it then. So we hope to keep building on to it. But at the same time, the stuff that I teach in that, I feel like should be in every leadership class. Like, you know, there's a class on emotional intelligence at Florida State. Totally should be talking about that as it relates to how your emotional intelligence impacts what you post or how you see the world, you know, how you're taken in Twitter. It is life. Social media isn't this separate sphere. It's, like it or not, it weaves its way into everything that we do. So I think it deserves having conversations in all these different leadership contexts.
That's crazy. What are your future plans for the course? Or do you have them yet?
I anticipate we're going to keep offering it. And I think long term, like, I've had a big dream, like we talked about before, that I would want to be able to offer it to the masses outside of an institution at a much lower cost. So I think that's like the big wish.
So what is it like? I mean, you wear a lot of hats and you juggle a lot of things. What, I mean, you kind of touched on this, but what, like, drove you to move in this direction with your career?
Part of it was just what I was going through in my professional world, and when I entered my doc program, like, it was 2000, I don't know, like 12. So, I mean, the internet wasn't new. Social media wasn't new. But it was still, like, people were fumbling quite a bit with, like, Facebook. And I think Instagram was just, like, getting hold finally. And what I saw people not struggle with so much with the strategy, but and especially at the executive level, I worked at a campus where I found a ton of pushback. And that's what I thought was going to first be my dissertation research was, I saw some, like, deans of students and senior vice presidents who were just rocking Twitter. Like, you could just tell they were being their real, hilarious, genuine selves and really connecting in cool ways. But then I saw other executives on campuses that would just be the worst thing to ask them to do ever. And so I wanted to research why. What's the difference? Like, why can one do it and one can't? So I did do a study on that, which has fueled all of my digital leadership work within higher ed that's not students, because I wanted to answer that question. So if tech and social media doesn't come naturally to you, can I give you this framework that you could apply to feel more confident? Because especially if you don't feel like like Twitter or Instagram comes naturally to you, I understand why you might have some reservations, but I hopefully can give you the value add beyond just like, oh, saying that you have a Twitter account now, like what the impact you could really have on it as a leader on campus. So not like as a department. So that really got me excited, and I do that work. But also, so my dissertation work, figuring out how we can better support students, because the research wasn't there at all about how students and especially student leaders were, what they were actually experiencing online. So at the time, everyone was having this huge debate, and they still do today, like, should I connect with my students on Facebook or not? Should I friend them? Should I not? Should I have a second account? Like, I get that question every time.
I hate it. And just do you, boo.
So I was like, okay, well, let's have this hypothesis. If I was to connect with all these student leaders at two different campuses, and if I was their supervisor, what was I going to see? Could I answer the question to say, no, actually, these students, because we're training them and supporting them outside of social media, does that actually rub off in how they're using social media? That was my hypothesis, that I think they were doing just fine. And if you were going to friend them on Facebook or on Instagram, everything would be cool, to like finally put that question to rest. And so part of my research was quantitative. So I literally had a scale where I would rate every single post over the year. So I monitored Facebook and Instagram for a year. There were over 2,000 posts that I monitored and I scaled to say, if I was defining my own scales within what's appropriate and what's not, you know, if I had to call them immediately to say, are you okay? Or take that down immediately to, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is great. So out of all those posts, 95.5% of the posts were completely appropriate, like no issue whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And the other handful, maybe there was alcohol or, you know, scantily clothed attire, but nothing was like, I need to call campus safety immediately. And so it told me, like, I think students are figuring it out, even if you're not giving them much training, because the students in my study didn't get much. And so that was great. That was a very proud moment. Like, I wasn't their supervisor, but I was seeing really cool, amazing things. Mm-hmm. And it was just another example of how I think we sometimes think the worst of our students, what we think they're doing. And so it's nice to be able to validate that.
Yeah.
No, they're pretty great.
Yeah.
They might stumble once in a while, but they can learn from that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have some student workers. I know Logan does too. And to watch them, I mean, it's a little different, but learning by doing, you know, learning about social media by, you know, social media for a institution or for an organization is much different than your own social media. But
absolutely.
Like, really, you know, we had some negative comments from, you know, some of our audience on a post, and all of them were like, we have to delete it right now. And it was like, no, you know, like, this is how it goes. Like, let's learn from this moment. And it was pretty cool to watch them learn by experience instead of me just telling them like, okay, well, if something like this happens, you know, this is how we do it.
So. That's so interesting. I mean, I wish even students that didn't run social media could experience that almost experiential activity, like learning that just happened between you and your students, because my research shows that students are not equipped to deal with conflict online. That's honestly why they've moved to more private and one-on-one direct applications like Snapchat or having secondary accounts, because they've run into struggles in the past, even with family members, and I have too, on platforms like Facebook, but they don't know how to deal with it. Like, especially if you know, like something blew up on Facebook between family and friends. So I think that's really interesting.
I would believe that. I mean, based on this very small, you know, case study that I had in my office, I would definitely believe that. But part of it too, you know, this wasn't their personal account. So they were kind of like in a panic, you know, it's on, oh my gosh, you know, it's on Skidmore's account. What do we do? And granted, the posts were not nice, but, you know, there's to a point where it's like, well, yeah, you know, not everybody's nice. Like some people say mean things. There's a line, at least in my opinion, when it comes to managing social media for an organization, there's a line between something that just doesn't feel nice and something that is cruel. And, you know, some sort of, if you think about like racist, sexist, homophobic, et cetera, is much different than just like someone that writes something that's kind of mean. So we have to think about that, you know, from an organization standpoint. But I mean, I don't think, I'm not surprised by you saying that, you know, that, right, that they're worried. I think it comes, it might just come from, you know, living, like we say all the time that they like grew up with social media, and they kind of did. But the, I can never say this word because my mouth won't make it. I'm going to try it. Anonymity. Anonymity. Of it all. I can't say it. It like my,
you just did.
Face does, my, words I had to say are it hard. Real slow. I just say it real slow. But you know, they come from that place. Like I remember, what was it called? Where there was a time when you could, it was like you made an account and people could anonymously leave you basically like feedback on you as a person. I was like, yeah, we're definitely not asking for someone to, you know, completely hate themselves after this, right? Like it's so much easier to say something cruel behind the anonymous wall than it is to their face.
So yeah, that's like Sahara is kind of like that. That's the, I don't think it's going to be the next Yik Yak, but that's what it's basis of like give anonymous feedback based on whatever.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes out for that one.
Oh, I'm so glad that died.
So Josie, you have a podcast, don't you?
I do.
Why don't you tell us a little bit
all about it?
It has been a labor of love that has been completely worth it. I blogged for a number of years, and it's a great, and I still blog, but I got a little burned out. So I started to look out into the landscape of what are other ways to share content, create content. And I was too intimidated to like create YouTube videos, because that also is kind of like an industry in my family. So I was like, I'm going to leave that one alone, but podcasting. And so of course I stumbled into like yours and a handful of others within higher ed. And I was like, okay, I think I can do this. But it was a lot of work. But I love it. And I get to talk about the two things that I love to talk about the most, and that's technology and leadership. So I invite anybody from a campus president to an undergraduate to someone that runs marketing at a corporation, and we just talk about kind of the human side of tech, and then even bigger questions like, what do you want your impact to be based on your Instagram account? Like, why are you really on Instagram? Like, what do you hope that's going to leave behind? And what's been really fulfilling for me, and again, I don't do this for like awards and stuff. Like, I really do just want to help people and move this digital leadership conversation to the forefront, is no one has ever come up to me to say, oh my gosh, I love your blog, I follow your blog, you write these great things. I have had people come out of nowhere, like I'm speaking at a conference or I'm at a campus, and they let me know they listen to the podcast. And again, honestly, I'm just thrilled to hear it's making an impact for them. That, you know, like sometimes it takes a lot to go up to somebody. So that's just really meant a lot to know it's making an impact. Like even sometimes with academic publishing, like you put this thing out into the publication world and you don't know who's really reading it. And I want to know whatever I'm putting out there is helping. And it seems like this type of content creation is really hitting, especially with grad students, new professionals, and mid-level, I think is my audience that is checking it out a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, I now that I am a podcaster, I get questions a ton from people interested in creating them. And I have to always warn people, I'm like, listen, I totally want you to do this. I'm so pumped you're thinking about it, but this is what it's going to take. Like, it's just so, so much work. But in all the best ways. And y'all, I'm y'all know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we know. We're almost, are we close to our anniversary, Logan?
So get this. So when this podcast goes out, it will be the 4-year anniversary of episode 0.
Wow.
Yep. Wow. Man, I think this is the longest relationship I've ever been in, Logan.
You should get t-shirts.
What are you going to get me for our anniversary? What's the 4-year anniversary thing?
Is it
gold?
Like,
I hope it's gold.
Probably like paper or something.
No, paper's the first.
Wood?
How about a toboggan?
I wouldn't use that.
Put together an Amazon wish list.
Let me look this up. Now I want to know. 4th anniversary gift is, drumroll, what's the 4th anniversary gift? Fruit or flowers. The modern gift theme is appliances. So if you can somehow combine fruit and an appliance, but I already have a blender, you get bonus points.
Okay.
With that, I think we're all out of time. But this was really fun. I would like to do a part 2 with you, Josie.
I would love that. That would be so congratulations fun. On your anniversary. Seriously,
thanks.
Y'all, I just really respect and admire how you were able to kick this podcast off so early on and kept it going. As you know, like, continuing them is sometimes the most difficult part. So I'm honored to be on here.
Well,
we're really happy to have you. Yes. And it's been a bumpy ride, but we appreciate our listeners who have stuck with us for 4 years. We know that we've not been as consistent as we probably should have been, but we're glad that you're still here with us. And we hope that you spread the word, which is part 1 of my outro. So if you are listening and you're like, hey, that was a really great podcast, I want to tell my friends about it, please do. You can tweet about it and include @HESpodcast is where you can find us on Twitter. You can also find us on the web at highered.social, where you can go listen to all of our past podcast episodes, all 100 of them, 100 plus now of them. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And we're now on Radio Public, which is really exciting. So go check them out. They're a great place to find new podcasts as well. And I definitely, leave us a review. Hop over to iTunes. It's the best way for you to tell us how we're doing, what you want to hear, and also to make us more likely to be found in the higher ed search of all the podcasts, because there's a lot of them out there. What did I forget, Logan? Yep.
That's it.
Awesome. Thanks again, Josie.
Thank you.
Have a great week, listeners.